Well, as I said, this originally was listed to be a teen Bible study, and we've added it, added to it the adults. The title of the seminar slash Bible study is Financial Management for the 21st Century, or another way of saying it, How to Manage Money, with emphasis on manage, manage money. The key is to rule money and not allow money to rule us, which often it does. I don't think we realize it, but money in whatever form it is cannot be separated from life. Somehow we have an idea that money is evil or the cause of evil, and we have life and then we just use money. But money is inextricably tied into life itself. Money of and by itself is absolutely wonderful. It really is. Why is that? Why can I say that? Because money is intended, and it was intended of God, to be an exchange for life. Keep that point in mind, an exchange for life. You want a new suit? You go to a store, and he says, what do you need? Well, I'd like a new suit. $500. Well, maybe I'll get a used suit. They need money in order to give you what you ask for. Money was intended and is intended of God to be an exchange for life. Let's notice that in Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 19. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 19. Speaking of certain things in life, it says, a feast is made for laughter. We're here at the Feast of Tabernacles, and we do a lot of laughing. Good. Wine makes merry. Nothing wrong with having a glass of wine. Drunkenness is a sin before God, but drinking alcohol or wine can add to a certain goodness of life. And then it says, but, you know, if you want to buy a bottle of wine, I remember years ago I went to an alcohol store in Tucson, Arizona. I was going to have the evening meal with an older couple I'd known in Pasadena, and I thought I'd get a nice bottle of one of the finest of wines. I looked at the price, and it was $60 in that time many, many years ago, and I thought, I think I'll get a cheaper bottle. It says, money answers everything. Money is inextricably tied in to most anything in life. It is a part of life. We need food, we need clothes, we need transportation, we want to buy a home, we'd like to travel and take a cruise, you'd like to have your children get the best of education, you want to give gifts. Quite often when you go to secure those things, they say, show me the money first. Show me the money first. As I said, the beauty of money is if it is used correctly, and that's hopefully what we'll be talking about this evening, if money is used correctly, it can assist in building an absolutely beautiful and wonderful life. But on the other hand, and there always is the other hand, the ugly aspect of money is, or can be, if it is used incorrectly, it can aid in the absolute destruction of life. So it depends on how we use it. In his book, Total Money Management, by Dave Ramsey, a man from Nashville, Tennessee, many of you may have heard of him. He has a lot of good information. I have his audio book here this evening if you'd like to just look at that. It is a really wonderful book in the matter of managing money. Ramsey says that 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Now, we usually get paid every 2 weeks, most people, and they just barely can, if not maybe can't, make it from one paycheck to the next paycheck. And that's awful. Why is that in the United States of America, formerly and to a degree now, the greatest nation on the face of the earth? If you ask an individual who is living from paycheck to paycheck why he might say, or she might say, well, I'm not paid enough, or I don't get a raise, or everything is too high priced, or we just need so many things, or the government taxes, the state taxes, and the local taxes just eat up my money. And so they're living from paycheck to paycheck. But if you look through what they said, the real truth is they are blaming someone else. They're shifting the blame for their inability to have the money to go from paycheck to paycheck to someone else. And they are saying, it is not my fault, it's someone else's fault. But could it be that they are not living by correct monetary principles? And that's the reason why they're living paycheck to paycheck. It is sad to hear and sad to see, but there are many people living a desperate life of frustration because of the money they don't have and they're trying to use in a wrong way. But the answer to that dilemma is actually very simple. Now, for those who are living paycheck to paycheck, they say, oh, come on, tell me another one. It's not that simple at all. It's difficult. I don't understand it. But the answer is really simple. One has to take personal responsibility for his or her own life and his or her own pocketbook. You can't, if you're making $100,000 a year, expect to keep up with a man who's making $500,000 a year. You have to take responsibility for your own pocketbook. This is shown or spoken of in Psalm 112 and verse 5. If you would turn there, please. Psalm 112, and we'll read verse 5. A good man deals graciously and lends. Now, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you don't have anything to lend to someone else. You just barely, if not even barely, have enough for your own needs. But this shows that a good man deals graciously, with grace. He's thinking of other people, and he actually will lend money or give money. And then it says, he will guide his affairs. In other words, he's in control of his monetary life, and he's guiding the decisions and the actions. He will guide his affairs with discretion, meaning he probably will use a budget or a spending plan to make sure that he's able to do all of that. So, as I said, it isn't all that difficult if we are using appropriate financial principles, honorable, godly financial principles. There's another one in Proverbs 22 and verse 3 that says somewhat the same, just a little bit different. In Proverbs 22 and verse 3, did I say? A prudent man or a prudent woman, a prudent individual foresees evil. Many of us just stumble along and stuff, and we don't see it until it hits us right in the face. But a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. Now, it doesn't mean hide in the sense of getting away from it, but a prudent man foresees the evil and does whatever is needed, takes action to solve the difficulty or to deal with the difficulty. And then it says, but the simple. And the word simple sometimes in the Hebrew means no folds. The gray matter that's in the brain and in the skull, there's a thousands of folds in there. But the simple, they don't have any folds. You know, they're what you'd call an air brain. And it said the simple, and I'm not saying that about any of us here, just explaining the Hebrew, that's all. But the simple pass on and suffer the consequences. So that shows that we have to be alert, we have to know the right principles, and we have to follow the right principles. And we have to take responsibility for our own pocketbook and our own life. We cannot blame it on anybody else. We make the final decision. So, where does one start in managing money? Well, how about drawing up a plan? Perhaps you've heard the statement, if you don't have a plan, you're planning to fail. How about starting with a plan? Now, we used to use the term budget, but that sounds so awful, and we hate a budget because it is so restrictive that I don't use the word budget anymore unless I forget. I use the word spending plan. Oh, I'd like that, a spending plan. We need a spending plan, which is a plan to spend every penny we earn. But keep listening. So the first item to discuss this evening is a spending plan, otherwise known as the unspoken word budget. The key in all of this is to live by correct financial principles. I've been asked if I am a financial planner, and the answer is no, I'm not a financial planner. I did think of that once, but I didn't want to spend the time or the money to get the degree. But so I'm not a financial planner, but I have had university-level classes on finance. And the fundamentals that they started in the book and the classes, they started with beware of debt, and 500 pages later they ended with beware of debt. Those are some of the fundamentals in building a financial plan, a spending plan. So, a spending plan. Let's look in Proverbs 21 and verse 2. Verse 3, Proverbs 22, verse 3. Again, just to mention, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, the simple pass along. The prudent is understanding of what is happening. In money management matters, the difference between success and failure is often a spending plan. You may have to think about that for a while, but the difference in failure and success is often a spending plan. He who fails to plan is planning to fail. Money was made to spend. It really was. It wasn't made to just be put in a hole and kept there. Money was made to spend. It was made to be used for the good things of life, because money is used as an exchange for the items we need in life. And God's way is a way of living. We all love to spend money. I don't know if you do or not, but I like to spend money, as long as I have money. However, a key factor in money management is, and this is a very key, do we spend more than we make? Often that's the problem. Do we spend more than we make? Or do we spend less than we make? Do we spend beyond our means, or do we spend within and below our means? You say, well, what difference does it make? Well, if we spend beyond our means, we will ultimately run into financial problems known as debt. Debt. If we spend within our means, we sleep better at night. We really do. No creditors are knocking at our door. The question is, how can we make sure we spend within our means, or that we live within our means? Well, the sage Ben Franklin gave this assertion. He said there were two ways to live within our means, and either way would work. However, he did prefer the first. And the first is to augment our income, meaning to make more money, always make more money. That he liked the best. The second was reduce our expenses. Well, when people hear that, they say, oh, you're cutting the fun out of life. You reduce our expenses. We would all like the first, but reality makes us fix kind of a jaundiced eye on toward the second one. As I said, we used to call it budgeting, but budgeting has such a negative connotation. People hate the word budget. It's like dieting. We go at it for a while, then we get tired, we give it up because it's boring. It's no fun. We love to eat. And that's not wrong either. So we need a realistic spending plan that can make our life as comfortable as we can make it. And that's an important point, to make life comfortable. We need a realistic spending plan. Let's start in Proverbs 21 and verse 20. This is the one I wanted, and I didn't quite find it looking at verse 2, and no wonder I didn't get it. Proverbs 21 and verse 20 says, "There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise." This shows that those who are using wisdom, following correct principles, there'll be money in their home. It said treasure, not just a dime or a penny, but treasure in their house. But a foolish man squanders it, or could be said another way, lives paycheck to paycheck. The wise have treasure at home. The foolish, they're living paycheck to paycheck, and that's why the problem. So it depends on how we handle or how we manage money, which involves our decisions. And our life is made up of all the decisions that we have made. The foolish spend it paycheck to paycheck, or even more than that, they get an advance paycheck, and they have to pay interest on that when they pay it back. And sad to say, many people are only one paycheck from disaster. Disaster. And you'd be surprised at the number of celebrities who destroy their lives almost with inappropriate spending. Elvis Presley was famous for that. He just couldn't handle his money. So why do we need a plan? Well, it's easier to spend than save, so why should we want to make a financial plan? The reason is it can help us achieve all of our financial goals. One by one, we will be able to achieve our financial goals. Financial planning may not help us earn more, because it's really not designed for that in one sense, but it can help us use, emphasis on use, the money that we do earn to achieve the goals we really want to achieve, and to make the dollar stretch as much as possible by using financial principles. What's the first key one needs to know in financial planning? How much do you make? It's kind of like governmental taxes. How much do you earn? Spend it in, or send it in. That's how much taxes you pay. It's a simplified federal tax form. How much did you make? Okay, send it in. Well, your financial planning, how much do you make? Be honest. Well, then that's all you can really spend. It's overly simplified in a way, but $1 in, $1 out. It's that simple. So the first thing you might do is prepare an income statement to know where you stand. Add up all the ways in which you or we make and receive money. For most, it's easy. You just look at the gross income figure on your check stub. If it's 2 weeks, you multiply that by 26 and you have your yearly income, the gross. If it's two, then you do that for the second person also and add both for a total gross income for both for the whole year. Now, I don't recommend that they live on those two incomes. That's one of the mistakes people make. They have a good life with two incomes, but then one loses the job and they're left with this lifestyle they have, and they can't keep it going because they only have one income now instead of the other. My wife, Delia, has worked for quite a few years over the years. She worked part-time, and as I've said, I supplied the roast, and she added a lot of gravy to it. But we didn't live on her income. We lived on my income, and then she added the nicer things if and when we had need of that. And I really have appreciated that. So I don't recommend that you live on two incomes, although it isn't wrong to use it, I'm saying, but the danger is when one loses it, you are in trouble, and it is possible and has been done that with only one income now, you will fall behind on your payments. You could even lose your home because you're just not able to pay the mortgage. That's the sad part of living on two incomes. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just telling you my view of it on certain ways. Now, if you're on commission, you can't, you don't know all the time how much, so take a low estimate for the month and multiply by 12 months, and you have your yearly gross. If you have other sources of income, then add it all into the total, and you have the total gross income. That's all that you can spend. Now, you can spend more, but you will have your difficulties. Then comes the interesting part. And that's the part no one really wants to face. But if you don't, it's time to prepare an expense statement or a spending budget, a spending plan, either for a month or a year, whichever you want. What do you spend money for, and how much do you spend on each item for a month or for a year? You say, well, I don't know. Well, why don't you know? If you don't know, then you can have some difficulties because you don't even know what you're spending or how much you're spending. You don't know how much you have left to spend or not. So you need to know. Monetary ignorance is not a blessing. It really isn't. How we spend money and what we spend it for tells an awful lot about our character. Or the lack thereof. If the way we spend our money does not coincide with our goals for life, our family, our children, then our goals are mere marks on a piece of paper. They're nothing more than a dream. They're not a goal. So in getting this expense statement or spending plan, first of all, you have to look at certain categories. There are mandatory expenses, taxes being one of them. If you're 65 or older, so, well, no, if you've got a job, then you're paying into the Social Security system also. There are those, I visited a man years ago in Ohio who said the taxes was not lawful, it was not constitutional, he wasn't going to pay taxes, and I couldn't argue him out of it. So he didn't pay his taxes, and he went to prison. So there are mandatory expenses that you really don't have much, if any, control over. Taxes, Social Security. Then there are certain fixed expenses that you have the same almost every month. Rent or mortgage payment. They are the same. Or, if you want to look on the tithe, 10%. There are fixed ones that you pay the same all the time, and you really can't reduce them. Usually, there are flexible expenses such as food. You can spend a lot of money or you can be frugal and spend a small amount of money and get the best food, but it is flexible. Clothes, as I said, $500 suit, you think, well, I've never had one. Well, that doesn't mean you're unfit for life. It just means you didn't have the money for whatever suit you might like to have. Clothes, eating out, America is an eating out nation. Movies, those are flexible. You can shave them down a little bit at times. Then there are discretionary expenses. Maybe, maybe not that you would have that expense, depends. So list all of the expenses and then subtract that from the gross income, and this is what you have available for your living expenses. Now comes the really exciting part where we have to make a choice. Life is a matter of choices, and successful money management involves choices. You cannot get away from it. We make a choice about those mandatory ones, including tithes. We make a choice about housing, and I'll go through these and not spend a lot of time on them. Housing, mortgages, utilities, maintenance, real estate, property taxes, and they're going up all the time. I moved to Delaware, Ohio, because the taxes were lower. They're higher now after being there 3 years. Those men in a certain office just decided to raise my property taxes, and not much, if anything, I can do about that. Furniture, appliances, and you multiply that by the 12 months for a year, and you get your total housing. Food supplies, eating out, multiply by 12 for the 12 months, you get your yearly total. Clothing and personal care, you do the same for that. Transportation, like automobile payments, gas, tolls, parking, registration, tags and stickers, repairs, and their repairs do have to happen. There are things that happen when you got a car, and if you don't have a little extra money, you may be pushing that car rather than riding in it. So there are things that are, you figure out how much it is. Recreation, well, we all like to have a lot of recreation, but sometimes it may depend on how much money we are able to spend on it. Medical, like doctors, dental, prescription drugs, and medicines. There are some people that are spending $1,500 a month on medicines because of the difficulties they have, and it is going to make their life extremely difficult. It is important to be as healthy as we can. Then there's insurance, life insurance, health insurance, auto insurance, home insurance, liability insurance. And then there are educational expenses, high school, college loans, child care, and then other, which I call stuff. And stuff happens. So you add all of that up for either the month for, and then multiply by 12 to give you a yearly one. Then you close your eyes and add up all these totals because you don't want to look at it sometimes. Is it over or is it under the amount that you can spend? If it's under, this is what you have left for the year for savings and investments. If it's over the amount you make, then comes the painful part. And you would be surprised at multimillionaires that come to this and they just won't make the decisions. I've got to have that boat, that yacht. I cannot give it up. If it's over, then comes the painful part. And life has a way of helping us to see reality. One in, one out. What do we make? How much can we spend? That's logically then all that we can spend, what we've made. Unless we want to run up debt. And then we incur interest, sometimes a very high rate of interest, on top of our payments. As I said, a lot of people live difficult lives because of that. It has been stated, and I believe it may have been Dave Ramsey also, that the average in the USA live consistently 3% over their income. Now, that's not much, but added up year after year after year, it does add up. I use the yearly totals, or you can use the yearly totals, because it helps to see the total picture. And that's important, to be able to see our total picture. Or, in other words, the end from the beginning. Sometimes we don't want to see the end from the beginning. But our God and Father says he knows the end from the beginning. And that's one of his wonderful traits. And we're to become like him, that we are like him. And we need to be able to see the end from the beginning so that it helps us in making decisions. But in money management often, we don't want to see the end from the beginning. We just want to close our eyes, spend like crazy, and hope that the laws of sowing and reaping don't work. But they do, always, always. How we spend our money, what we spend it for, and the amount we spend on each category or arena tells a lot about our character, what we're made of. You may know this, you may not. When I first began to comprehend this, it kind of surprised me. You'll find in Matthew 25 and Luke 19, where it's talking about the parable of the talents, and the talents and the whatever the other one was, it is talking about being in the kingdom of God, of being like God, And it is likening money management to godly character. And it is likening the money management to being in the family of God. Let's look at just a little bit of that in Matthew 25, beginning in verse 14. Because sometimes we think money is just an ungodly thing, but God himself uses it as, to teach us a lesson in connection with being in his family and being like him. Matthew chapter 25 and beginning in verse 14. The kingdom of heaven is like. A lot of people today use that expression often. Well, it's like. And you go, well, it's like. Well, it's like. And they never tell you what it's like. But God says it is like a man traveling to a far country, called his servants, delivered them his goods. He gave to one 5 talents. Now, a talent is an ability, but it was also a measure of money. So he gave them a measure of money, and then he gave it to some others, and it says in verse 15, the latter part, to each according to his ability, and immediately he went on a journey. And in verse 19, after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled up accounts with them. We don't like it when they settle up the account, but God is going to settle up an account. And he's using money as a type of that, of being in the family of God. Then in Luke 19, beginning in verse 12, we'll see just a little bit different here. Luke 19 and verse 12. A certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom, and then to return. So he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 mina, or in other words, another monetary amount, or using money again as a certain measure. And he said, do business with this till I come back. And now this talks about the growing and overcoming and changing and being able to be in that family. Then notice verse 14. But his citizens hated him. And they said, we're not going to have this man rule over us. In other words, they said, and you may have heard this, nobody is going to tell me how to use my money. But God does. He does. And he does it for our good. And if we follow his guidelines, we have a wonderful financial life. So, money management is likened unto growing and changing and being in the family of God. Filthy lucre is used as a type of spiritual character. Denny Luker always talks about that. Herbert Armstrong used to say, ah, Denny Luker, it's filthy lucre. Denny's a good guy. Any character can spend money, but it takes character to spend money properly for the good of all. And that's what money is for, ultimately. So, let's go through the list again and see if we can reduce or eliminate some items. As I said, if you only got so much, that's all you can spend. Some items are fixed, you can't change it. Some items are flexible, you can rearrange it and you can lower it. Some items are discretionary and you don't need it now and you may not need it at all. And I speak from experience. In 1998, there was certain difficulty, and salary of 29 ministers in United Church of God was slashed 50%. Lily and I, they didn't ask me on it. They just said, and the next day I was 50% lower in salary than I was before. But I was willing to do that because I believe this is God's church, and if I can help the boat to float properly, fine. Now, we didn't have any debt. We 96? No, I didn't own our home, but I bought a home. But I didn't have any debt, didn't even have a dog to feed, so we got along all right, and it worked, but I understand what it is like to say, well, I've got to have this. I deserve this. I'm entitled to this. Really? Well, what if the boat is sinking? You do anything you can to keep it from sinking. So I speak from personal experience in financial management, and I've learned from it. I've seen the errors I've made. I've seen the attitudes that I've had, and I've seen the blessings that God gives and the way His laws, rules, or guidelines work. And they're very kind and generous. I'm entitled to this. Okay. If your salary is cut or if you're not making what you need, the alternative is debt if you maintain that you are entitled to it and won't try to find alternatives to the difficulty. The object is to balance the budget. Otherwise, you have a crisis. And as I said, Billy and I understand that from personal ways. Now, there are various ways to set up this spending plan, and I'll just mention it to you. Write it out on a sheet of paper for all to see if you're married, your wife and children sometimes. And that's a mistake I made in early years. I wrote it out on a piece of paper, put it in my pocket, and nobody saw it. They didn't know what I was deciding. I tried to decide for the good, but it would have been better done the other way. Write it on a piece of paper for all to see, and use envelopes for each category. That's just a suggestion. The second one is a sheet of paper with categories and amounts of each in the category, all kept in the bank. Then a third one, for you who are now techies, and we have more and more of this, a software program. You have a software program that adds, subtracts, and multiplies, and all you do is just hit the buttons, and it's done for you, and you get it all squared away in a hurry. Whatever you use, be brutally honest. Brutally honest in this, and work at it, because it will work. It really will if you want it to, and math does not lie. It really doesn't. Let's look in Proverbs 27, verse 23. Proverbs 27 and verse 23 concerning this. Oops. Proverbs 27 and verse 23. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and your herds. Translated to money, be diligent to know where you are financially. Because if you don't know, you don't know. And you don't know what decision to make sometimes if you don't know where you are. So it is good. It's a good idea to have this budget, to balance it, to know where you are. Be diligent to know the state of the flock and herds. For riches won't last forever, and a crown endures to all generations. When the hay is removed and the tender grass shows itself and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in, the lambs will provide clothing and the goat the price of a field. You'll have enough goat's milk for your food and food for your household and nourishment for your slaves or maidservants. So the key is be brutally honest, work at it. It'll work if you work at it. Be diligent to know where your money is, and it will work for you, not against you. Now, it may take several revisions in making out this spending plan. The first draft is not cast in stone. It's designed to serve you. It's a way of maximizing your dollar for the benefit of all. So discuss it with others if you need to, and have the finished product there for all to see. Then let's look at Proverbs 21, verse 20, one more time. This is such an important one. As I said, Dave Ramsey said 70, maybe even 80% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Proverbs 21 and verse 20. There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish person squanders it. Lives paycheck to paycheck. foolishly spends it all. Good money management has untold benefits now and much later. Why do I say that? Well, let's look in Proverbs 22 and verse 4. It's right after that about the prudent man foreseeing the evil. In verse 4, it talks about the attitude toward life, toward God, toward money. Verse 4, by humility, not arrogance. Money can make us arrogant. And if we're arrogant and we get a lot of money, we'll just be more arrogant. I've heard it said, you know, money makes you more of what you were before. You got the money. Humility. Respect for God's ways. Riches, honor, and life, it says, by humility and the respect for God are or will bring riches, honor, and life. Money's involved in all of that. And it's our attitude, and it's God's principles. So that's what I have about the spending plan. If you don't have a plan, you probably are planning to fail. Unless you're an extremely, extremely brilliant one and you can keep it all in your mind. Most of us have to have a piece of paper to put it on. The next one is, and I've mentioned it, but the next one is debt, which is translated living beyond our means. The next part is about a four-letter word. You're all aware of it. Many of us use it. Some don't. Some are slaves to its use, and some have overcome the use of it. And those who continually to use it are often burdened with a load of guilt. And those who overcome the use of this four-letter word have a feeling of freedom. That well-known four-letter word is debt. D-E-B-T, or an acronym for debt is, using D-E-B-T, don't even be tempted. But the truth is, and many of us do not realize that, we are targeted daily on television. In other ways, we are targeted and encouraged to go into debt. You deserve this. Charge it. Get this card. And especially teenagers now are being targeted for credit cards. No evil in it of and by itself, but if you don't have experience in using money, it's very easy to get way, way in debt with a credit card. Especially if mama and daddy won't send money to college. The credit card can cause some difficulties. Debt. Debt is summarized in the second half of a succinctly worded proverb. Proverbs 22 and verse 7 says, and this is right after training up a child, the rich rule over the poor. And that's true, has been for hundreds of years. And then it says, those who borrow money are servants, otherwise known as slaves, to the one they got the money from. And we don't realize it, but often the borrowing of money changes our attitude toward the person and the attitude of the person toward us. And especially if we don't pay it back. It really does. There are disadvantages in borrowing, even emotionally. The borrower is a slave. Those who are constantly in debt are gradually drowning financially. And also, and this is the sad part, those who are constantly in debt or voluntarily giving away their hard-earned money to other people in interest. Whereas if they would save it and spend cash, they could probably get a discount and get the same item for a lot less. But they borrow. They're in debt. Debt is a way of living beyond one's means. Buy now, pay later. Plus a little interest, you know, sometimes. I remember in Jimmy Carter's day, it was 17 to 20% interest. That was commonplace. It also means that we're shortchanging ourselves. We don't get the full value of the money, which is the sad thing. You get clipped at every purchase. What if that becomes a lifestyle? A lifestyle. Well, it means disaster. Maybe poverty. Who knows? As it said, ultimate slavery to this, to whoever you borrow it from. It also means we are catering to our wants, not our needs. And we are a living example of pursuing instant gratification. As I said about Jesus, Satan offered the nations to him, and Jesus said, I've already got that. I just need to wait a while. I don't care to worship you to get it now. And that's a really wonderful point. A person in debt is in bondage, bound by a contract to repay. And debt does have its consequences. And I don't think sometimes we really realize what debt can lead to, or how it is looked at in the Bible. If you commit a murder, or if you commit adultery, or if you steal, or you lie, these are big sins, socially and in God's sight, and they have penalties. But debt can also be just as bad, because if it is out of instant gratification, which is lust, covetousness. Last time I looked at the Ten Commandments, the tenth one said, don't lust, don't covet. We think of lust as sexual only. No, it can be other things, many other things. We can lust after what money can bring us. And if that's true in our life, then we're guilty of a sin that, according to God's law, demands the death penalty if we don't repent of it. So sometimes people don't really see it for what it really is. Really is. Living beyond one's mean, you don't have the money, and it is hard to see that instant gratification and demanding your way, I'm going to get it or else, is a very serious sin if it is lust. You will find in Ephesians 5, verse 5, it does not speak very favorably of covetousness, which is lust. Let's look at Ephesians 5 and verse 5. This was a city, a part of a nation, that worshipped Diana of Ephesus, a very, very sensuous goddess. Who knows how much money the Ephesians spent on worshipping that goddess. Ephesians 5 and verse 5 says, for this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous person, and obviously it's talking about the continuation of that, or a practice of life, covetous man who is an idolater, and idolatry is a horrible sin, has any inheritance in the kingdom of God in Christ. So as I said, it's hard, a little hard to see that sometimes because we want it and we want it. Debt is a choice. We make that choice. Sooner or later, we have to take responsibility for our choices. And I hope when we do that we begin to realize that we've short-sheeted ourselves and could have had a lot more if we had just waited and done it according to God's principles. True, we may have helped or nudged a little bit in making the choice that led to the debt, but little influence there. Let's look at a few arenas of life where debt is commonplace in the United States and other nations, and the average American does not realize how they are shortchanged. They don't realize also that they're targeted by businesses and the banks in order to draw them into debt as a lifestyle. And they're smiling, thinking the bank is helping them. I'll always remember, I ordered the book Financial Self-Defense from the Charles Givens Foundation in Orlando many years ago. And he said, and I've never forgotten it, and I will always be grateful that he taught that to me in his book. He said, there are a lot of people that have their hands in your pockets, and you don't know it. You think they're helping, and you're smiling thinking that they're helping, but they got their hand in your pocket, and they're getting your money, and you don't even realize it. One of the biggest places in which they have their hand in our pocket and we incur debt and we think they're helping us is the 30-year mortgage loan for a home. Now, I'm not saying it's evil to have it. I understand that. But I think sometimes people don't realize how much money they are losing by having that. 30-year loan is standard. It is designed specifically so that banks get the interest before you get the equity. Did you realize in a 30-year financial mortgage for your home that it takes 21 years for interest and equity to become equal? 21 years of a 30-year mortgage before you're paying as much on equity as you are interest. For the first 21 years up to that, you're paying more in interest than you are. That is called front-loaded. It's loaded on the front so that they get the money, because they also know that many people don't stay in a house 20 years. They may stay there 7 or 10. And all that time, the bank's getting all this extra interest, and we're not getting much equity at all. And we think they're helping us. But it was designed to be that way. A 15-year mortgage would be far better. Yes, you have to pay a little more on it, but you have a lot more money to save. I experienced that. The first home we bought in Indiana, northwest Indiana, I paid $130,000 for a home, a 7% mortgage rate with 20% down. And I looked it all up and saw it. I ran it out on a computer to see if I paid 30 years worth of mortgage payments, one month at a time. I would actually be paying $310,000 for that home. We say, well, I bought my home, and they say, well, how much did you pay for it? Oh, $130,000. No, in 30 years I would have paid $310,000. But I began to understand that, and I paid it off. We paid it off in 12 or 13 years. So I had $100,000 in my pocket rather than the bank's pocket. They didn't like that. An auto is another one. We all need wheels, but do we need to pay $30,000 for a car that 3 years later has lost 40% of its value, and you still owe 50% of its value? Save, buy a good used car, let the other guy get the new car and lose the 30-40%. Credit cards is another one where we think they're helping us and we carry a balance or we pay the minimum. We are living beyond our means, and that's where a lot of times a teenager gets targeted, and they are targeted carrying a balance. No problem. It may take years to pay off the amount you have on a credit card. And I think the average person now in the USA, a family, is about $3,500 on a credit card. Well, if you just pay the minimum, it's going to take you a long time to pay that off. And they are getting your money instead of you having it in your own pocket in your own bank. Do you remember the stimulus package the Fed gave the U.S. banks in 2008-2009? It was somewhere around $350 billion, I believe, give or take a few billion, from the Fed to the banks. You know why they did that? So that the banks had the money and they had to lend to you and me so that we could then buy and raise the economy. In other words, the stimulus plan was to get the banks to lend money to us, and if we have money lent to us, we are in debt to the bank, targeted by the bank, so that the economy would get better. Deliberate planning. We were deliberately targeted. one of the worst loans, and is a payday loan. The fees are awful, and they're not thinking of your welfare. But then, of course, in this matter of debt, we are in very, very, very good company. The last I heard, and we're not always sure if that what we hear is accurate, but our beloved government owes $16 trillion. I cannot fathom that. I read a book years ago also by Gerald Mundis. It was just a small book, easy to read. How to get out of debt, how to stay out of debt, and how to live prosperously. He said in 3, 5, 7 years, you can't believe the change that would be in your life by following those principles. As I said, Dave Ramsey has Total Money Makeover, and he says the same thing, and it's a very good one also, that in 3 to 5 to 7 years, you just cannot believe that you can be debt-free totally with all the money you're making coming into your pocket, but it will take the effort and the decisions, the determination to live by these practical principles. And no longer will you be a slave to the lender, constantly in debt. Remember, Proverbs 21:20 says that there is treasure in the home of the wise or the prudent, but the foolish spend it all, paycheck to paycheck. I am the son of a sharecropper cotton farmer in Texas. I guess my great-grandfather in Mississippi was a cotton farmer. My grandfather in Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas was a cotton farmer. And my father was a cotton farmer, and I grew up harvesting cotton. I was a sharecropper's son. I used to be embarrassed about that, but then I learned that if you worked for Ford Motor Company in Detroit, you were sharing the profits of Ford Motor Company, so you were a profit sharer there, too. You were a sharecropper, you might say, for Ford. My father would borrow money in April, later than May, plant and harvest a cotton crop, and then he would pay it all back in November plus interest. He didn't even get all that he made, and he did that year after year after year. And my father never, ever, ever broke the cycle, and he died in a rest home with nothing. Because he just didn't either know how or what, I don't know, but he didn't. I'll see him in the second resurrection and ask him if he wants a loan. But then I can't charge interest because he's my father. That's another one of the wonderful blessings in God's financial plan. He doesn't think very kindly of those who use usury on the poor people. So let's get into the next one in money management, and that is saving. Saving. It's a part of this financial spending plan. And I deliberately left it out up until now. But the category is saving or savings. I can hear people say, well, I thought you said we were spending it all. Well, we are. But saving should be looked upon as a part of the spending plan. We set it aside. We may have to use it sometimes. I got a list of the rate of savings for the USA going back to 1959 from the U.S. Department of Commerce. In 59, the average rate of savings in the USA was 8.3%. In 69, 10 years later, it was still 8.3%. In 75, it was 10.1%. I think that was before Carter came along, not sure. In 79, it was 9.2. In 85, it was 10.3. But in 89, it began to drop. Not precipitously, but it dropped a lot. In 89, it was 5.3. In 99, it was 2.4. And in 2005, the savings rate was 1.5. Today, it's somewhere around 3 or 4. It depends on which figures you see, but it's not very much at all. People don't have the money to save. They're saving more because they realize the disaster of not having any money, but they're still not saving much at all. How long has it been since we took a look at the ant? I get tickled when Delia and I walk. We come across a big mound of ants. I hear her stomp, stomp, stomp. She's trying to kill every last one of them. But the Bible says we should take note of them and how they work. God advises us to do some serious financial thinking as we watch the ants. Proverbs 6, verse 6 talks about the ants who prepare, that is, they save up provisions in advance. She saves for the future. Savings is a godly measure. Again, let's look in Proverbs 22, verse 3, because it deals with saving or not savings. Proverbs 22 and verse 3 says, "A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." We know we will need money in the future. We don't bother to think about it. We just pass on and take the consequences. But a prudent man foresees that and takes actions. So saving is very important. I know, people say, in personal development, even personal development people are recommending strongly that we save at least 10% of every dollar that we make. Well, a lot of people can't afford to pay 10%. So the key is saving, period. Start with 1%, or start with 0.5%, or start with something at least to get in the habit of not spending every last penny without saving. And included in that saving would be an emergency fund. You know, your serpentine belt on your car breaks, and it causes a lot of other things to go haywire. You find there are different... I went in and took the car into the Goodyear store, and I came out with a lot less money in my pocket. There are things that happen, and if your refrigerator goes on the blink, you have to buy a new refrigerator. Or if your heater and air conditioner goes out, then you got to buy that. There are needs. There are emergencies that happen. They do happen. And if you don't have the money, then you got to go into debt. But if you have, and they recommend 3 to 6 months of expenses for emergencies, well, you can begin to pile that up just a little bit, 1% here until maybe a little one. I read this book and I brought it along tonight. It's called The Richest Man in Babylon. It's fictional, but it's really nice. Has some really good lessons. And the plight of the average worker is put into a very interesting story in this book, The Richest Man in Babylon. Algamash, the one that was the richest, was talking to Arkad, and Arkad later talking to a bunch of boys that he had grown up with. And Arkad was wealthy, and the more he gave away and spent, the more money he seemed to have. And they couldn't understand that. You know, we grew up together. We went to school together. We lived in the same area. Now you're filthy rich, and we can't even pay our bills. What's up? And he told the story of Algamash, who taught him this lesson, and he said, "I learned the secret to wealth. when I decided that a part of all that I earn is mine to keep. And they said, is that all? Surely it can't be that simple. But he was teaching savings. It's our money to begin with, and it is ours to keep if we choose. He said, when I decided that a part of all I make is mine to keep. Absolutely marvelous and wonderful principle. And will help us with this emergency fund and the savings for who knows what in the future. We're not just saving money to throw it away, but saving because there will be needs, time for children, grandchildren, who knows what. This is where the spending plan helps us to see the entire picture from the beginning to the end. We factor into the spending plan savings as a part of the total income, the total expense balance sheet. Some say pay yourself first. Well, we pay the tithe first, but it's understood. Most of them advocate 10%. As I said, you may need to start, because we already are paying tithe first and second and other things, you may have to start with 1%. But don't give up. Be positive about it and keep working at it. What if you become ill? You can't work. You're laid off. Your income is reduced. How long could you survive financially? If you lost all means of financial support tomorrow, how many months before losing your home? Something to think about. As I said to Lee and I, had our salary, my salary, our income slashed in half. And they didn't ask me if I wanted it that way. I knew as soon as I picked up the phone and listened to that man's voice talking what was going to happen. The key is to start saving before the necessity comes knocking on the door. Because there will be necessities. Car, appliance, reserves in case of losing a job, education at school, repair and maintenance of the home and other things, appliances, emergencies that you didn't foresee at all, annual events such as a vacation if you would like to, visiting a family, even church events cost money. We have to make decisions what we want to spend our money on. And if we want to retire, to do whatever we could to make that possible. The key factor in all of this is our buying into these principles. Nobody is going to hold a gun to your head or mine. They're not going to hold a gun to our head. We have to make that choice. One of the funniest jokes I heard in a long time was about a man, and I'll put it in Texas this time since I am from Texas. He was hitchhiking, and a car came along, picked him up, and he got into the car and rode in the front seat with the one man there. It was a pickup, it was. And after a while, he noticed there was a paper sack there, and he asked the man driving what it was, and he picked it up and took it out, and it was a fifth of White Lightning. And finally, the driver said, "Have a drink." And the hiker said, "No, I don't really want one." And he said, "Oh, come on, be a good guy, be a sport, have a drink." And he said, "No, I really don't." And finally the driver got upset and he said, "I said to have a drink." And he had pulled out a gun and was holding it to his head. He said, "I said to have a drink." Oh, well, that changed the matter. The hiker then, he took a drink. His eyes began to get red, his face got swelled up and the tears coming down. And he said, "That is the worst drink I have ever had in my whole life." And the driver said, "Yeah, I know. Now you hold the gun on me while I have one." Nobody is going to hold a gun to our head. They're not. It's our choice. We're looking for life. If we don't buy into these goals, and I notice in Isaiah 2, you know, we read it many, many times, where the nations finally come up to Jerusalem. Let's go to Jerusalem. Well, let's go to the house of God. He will teach us of his ways. That shows they have bought in. It's theirs. And so we have to buy into these principles because they're godly principles. They're living laws. Whether we believe in them or not, they will affect our life. We usually spend everything, and if there's anything left, which there usually isn't, then we pay ourselves a little, but there usually isn't anything. All of this is a matter of running the numbers or counting the cost. And I think we've all heard that statement of our older brother and Savior Jesus talking about building a house, and he said they didn't count the cost. So they couldn't build the building. We do have to count the cost, and it works better that way. We all love to spend money. It's easy to spend, and it's harder to save. That's why we need a spending plan, which includes savings. I think the words of Algamesh to Arkad, that fictional character in the book Richest Man in Babylon, are about the most biblical words that any man has ever written on the subject of financial management. I found the secret to wealth when I decided that a part of all I earn is mine to keep. It's a decision. A prudent person foresees the financial trouble and prepares for it. We as older people can see all that now because we've made mistakes. Youth who have no experience in that, unless they listen to God's words and follow them, will probably have to learn some lessons the hard way too. That's why these principles, especially in Proverbs, are directed at children, young people, because they don't have the experience. And God doesn't want them to destroy their lives. He wants them to be good, or to have a good life by following the principles. So a prudent person foresees the financial trouble and prepares for it. But the foolish just keep on doing what they did, and you have to take the consequences. Then I would like to just discuss one thing a little bit here, then we will conclude. I'd like to talk about studying financial principles. We talk about wanting to be financially sound, but how many, well, I might ask, you don't have to if you don't want to, but how many of you know what an amortization schedule for a home mortgage is? Good. Quite a few. Many don't. We want to be financially sound and stable, but are we willing to study information to find it out and learn those financial principles? I'll give you a few names that have some wonderful information. You can probably get it at a used bookstore for 50 cents or a dollar. I think I paid $13 for it in 92, something like that. Charles Gibbons, Financial Self-Defense, a very good book on managing money. Larry Burkett, I think it is. He was a Christian. He wrote quite a few books on financial management. Jim Rohn, R-O-H-N, is a personal development individual. He had somewhat to say about money. Darren Hardy, who is the president of Success magazine, and wrote the book Compound Effect, which he plagiarized from the proverb, from God's word, about little by little, little by little. But it is a good book. Napoleon Hill, who first of all wrote 12 books, I think, back in about 1928. He called them the Laws of Success, and that was so boring a title. They said, you got to get a jazzier title, so he got the title Think and Grow Rich, which is still a bestseller in some areas. Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill. And then the one I mentioned, Dave Ramsey, you can look at if you want to, in Nashville, is his Total Money Makeover. And it really is a total money makeover. And if you follow that in 3, 5, 7 years, you will see many, many, many differences, and you can't believe the goodness that money will bring. And I'm not talking about worshiping it, just using it as God intended. Susie Orman is another one. She has her television program, and I don't like it as well as Randy, but that's because I'm prejudiced against women, you know that. She has some good books. She has some very good books. I don't remember the fullest name of it, but one of them was Young rich, no, no, young and broke, something like that. Good looking, young, broke. In other words, they have it all together in one sense, but they don't have any money. They're broke. It's a good book. The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason. It's up here. And another one, The Richest Man Who Ever Lived by Stephen Scott, about Solomon and his wealth and principles there too. Studying will help you. And you can then read those places in the Bible about money. As I said, God uses money as a type of being in the kingdom of God. He said, how much did you make? He gave them talents and pounds, and they were monetary measures that pointed toward Christian character. So money is very important. It really, really is very important, and it can enhance our life. It is not, as my mother used to tell me, you know, money is the root of all evil. Well, she could say that because we never had any. Lovely lady. Well, that's it for this evening as far as I know. I hope that you'll learn the joy of life that comes from developing a spending plan, a realistic spending plan that factors in savings and covers all categories of your life as much as you're able to do. Thank you for coming. We'll see you tomorrow.